Welcome back to another episode of Télévision Éducative. Tonight, I'll show you how dreams are prepared. People think it's a very simple and easy process, but it's a bit more complicated than that.
And welcome back to Breaking the Screen Spell, an Only in San Jose special that investigates and analyzes the impact of digital addiction and its prominence in society. My name is Deisha Huang, and I will be co-hosting with producer Alina Yin.
Okay, so Deisha, I'm curious to know what your thoughts on our conversation that we had with Snigdha. Did something in particular stand out to you, or do you have reflections? Yeah, what was going on when you were listening or when you were in the interview?
Yeah, I took away a lot of good tips to really stay engaged in conversations. Even though this is sort of an analysis of the comparisons between in-person and digital communication, I found myself really interested in that point of active participation in conversations and how digital communication doesn't necessarily correlate to impaired communication skills. I also found myself being more aware of what happens during conversations in person, like the tones and the nonverbal cues that we mentioned.
What do you mean by, like, active? You had said something, I forget the phrase, it was like active in conversation or active listening, something along
active
those lines.
Active participation.
Yeah, active participation. What do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah. Like the eye contact and being able to maintain that conversation really well. Mm-hmm. I think that some of those tips that she mentioned are really important to be able to really connect with the other person, whether it's just like on a video call or in person. I think that that sort of connection through those tips is crucial to being able to express yourself mm-hmm. and being able to understand the other person.
Yeah. Okay. Eye contact and, yeah, presence within the conversation. One thing that stood out to me was like in the very beginning of the interview when you asked her what led her into this work, and she was talking about just how she grew up and TV, watching a lot of TV or other forms of addiction to technology, I guess you can say. It wasn't exactly the phone, but still it was a screen. And so I thought that was interesting because that reflects my lived experience of seeing, I feel like my family spent a lot of time watching TV, but part of it wasn't so much like we weren't straight consumers, I would say, of what was on TV. We were learning English. And so they'd watch like a lot of movies. We watched like some funny movies, like Jean-Claude Van Damme was just so popular. And I don't know if you know who that is.
I don't think so.
Oh, so funny. Anyways, doesn't matter. And so, yeah, so we did watch a lot of TV, and sometimes there could be, I feel like I see it more lately that they're maybe watching too much TV. But then, you know, post-pandemic, I think everybody watched a lot of screens, right? I don't know. How was your screen time usage during the pandemic?
Yeah, I found myself more reliant on screens just because
we couldn't school really, too, right?
Yeah, school, and because we couldn't really go outside because, you know, pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But I relied on a lot of technology for education and entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some periods where I would spend probably most of the day just on a computer or my phone.
Ouch. How did that feel? Were you like sleepy or, you know?
Yeah. I felt like I was not getting enough sleep, even though I got like 10, 11 hours of sleep every night. Mm-hmm. I found myself waking up really lethargic and not being able to concentrate really well.
Yeah. And you had like no exercise really, because you used, you know, you play tennis, you do all these sports, you're young, able body, having fun. And so during the pandemic, you were inside a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. With everybody else, you know, with the family. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of interesting looking back. It felt like collectively as a society, we just went like deep into, okay, do you know what Alice in Wonderland is? Like down the rabbit hole?
Yes.
Okay. So we all went down the rabbit hole during the pandemic. And congratulations, Dicha. You're like one of the first emergers of the from the rabbit hole. And you're trying to get us to break the screen spell of digital addiction. Full circle. So yeah, so that was kind of like, I was just, when she told her story, it triggered my memories of growing up with television and it being like the coolest thing. You know, that was like the advanced technology of our time during when I was your age. Okay.
Is not an iPhone. This is a $3 trillion military-grade lethal weapon aimed straight at your brainstem. If you're watching this, it's because your most primal needs and impulses are being weaponized by to get you to give up all your precious minutes and hours down to the last second. This is done with an invisible asymmetry of power. Tristan is a foremost expert on this, and you should watch his whole testimony in front of Congress, but the bottom line is this. You are being fucking harvested, and no one is coming to save you. But all hope is not lost. Hear me out. We all have 24 hours in today, and we all have commitments and human needs, so the time that we're left with is the most valuable. With this, we can steer the course of our life or create new memories. But how much of yourself do you feed to the beast against your will? You could take full control of your life at any moment, but you have to fight for it. Now get the fuck off of Instagram.
Today's Wednesday. We did the social media detox. I failed.
Wait, let me check, actually. Okay, yeah, I failed too.
And sometimes we fail, but you know what? You can start again tomorrow.
We will now be joined by Ms. Snigdha Samantre, who is a certified clinical psychologist and digital mental health specialist from Bangalore, India. Presently, she heads the specialty of mental wellness at Mfine, an Indian AI-driven health tech company. She has profound research experience from the National Institute of Mental Health and Neuroscience, an institute of national importance under the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare of the Government of India. Her key research areas include digital mental health, psychology behind technology, impact of AI on the human mind, and technology addiction. She has professional experience in psychometric testing and therapies, like CBT, psychoanalytic, and humanistic therapies. She also has experience in psychophysiological therapies, like neurofeedback and neurorehabilitation. She believes in neutralizing mental health disorders, equal status for all, and serving humanity to her best. To get started, please tell us a little bit about yourself. What motivated you to pursue research regarding digital addiction?
I believe it's a general observation about people in life that made me curious and wonder why someone would get into excessive digital indulgence, strain their eyes, waste their time at the cost of physical, mental well-being, and of course, their finances. I think some life instances as well, like growing up with a family member who used to binge watch television till 4 a.m. in the morning. And sometimes I would be at the airport and would observe these children who would stop crying or become less fidgety when they are given mobile phones. During my clinical practice also, I've come across many clients. For example, one client would have this compulsive need to scroll through dating apps. So, and also, if I think I have to add a personal example, I would go back to a time where I myself overcame an unhealthy indulgence in shopping applications. So to answer your question, if I have to summarize in a nutshell, I believe the instant gratification and the distraction that digital mediums provide intrigued me. And the gradual, fateful course of my career towards digital mental health as well motivated me to pursue research in this area.
During your research, what would you say is the one fact that stuck out to you the most?
I think during my research, the addictive nature of digital medium is what struck me the most. I was completely baffled, fascinated, at the same time, you know, perplexed by how it keeps you hooked to it, how it distracts you completely, you know, from your worries, from whatever is bothering you, and how it can build that disconnect between your imagined self and your real self.
That's really interesting. And that leads me to another question. Do our communication skills regress when we only talk to others through an app?
Well, that's a nuanced topic of discussion and pretty much debatable. It wouldn't be accurate to say our communication skills regress when we communicate with others only through applications, as it's not universal. However, there are some potential, instances where, app-based communication can, prove to be a challenging situation, can get you into a challenging situation. You know, one such challenge that people usually face is the lack of human touch, where the elements of nonverbal cues, facial expressions, tone, pitch, especially empathy may be missing in the communication. You know, another challenge that people generally face is the subjective interpretation of emojis and abbreviations, and these can really be misleading. For example, a heart emoji, like we all send heart emojis, right? But it's not that simple as it appears to be. A heart emoji, that a sender sends with a friendly intention can actually be perceived by the receiver as a romantic gesture, especially if the receiver is anticipating romantic communication from the sender. Now, this also gets me to the next interesting occurrence. I've observed in my clinical practice that app-based communication can potentially delude someone, especially if this person is going through mental health conditions like psychosis or depression. You know, I like to give example of one of my client who was diagnosed with erotomania, a mental health condition in which a person believes that another person of romantic interest who is very special and who is in a higher status is infatuated with them. So my client would believe that this person of interest is in love with her. She would constantly check this person online, would stalk his public posts, and would try to decode hidden romantic messages in his posts, and would believe those messages were directed at her, whereas there was no real conversation or confession of romantic feelings between them. You'll be surprised if I tell you they never even met. It was all in her head. She believed it with conviction. And this is how deluding app-based communications can be. App-based communications can also affect other people, especially the ones who have social anxiety or have anxious, avoidant personalities. They prefer to communicate through applications or text mediums, especially because they're trying to avoid face-to-face interaction because they're feeling anxious, or they are probably trying to avoid a conflict that they are apprehensive about. So this, of course, then the app-based communication don't necessarily help them overcome their symptoms or become better.
You brought up some really good points. Going back to what you said about the use of emojis in text and online communication, I think an ongoing trend with the younger generation now is that we don't necessarily take the literal meaning of those emojis. For example, my friends and I would use sob emojis to convey laughter, or, as you mentioned before, heart emojis to convey friendship. And I believe a lot of it goes back to the intersectionality of our social experiences, whether it's online or in person, that might lead us to express ourselves in different ways. Sometimes it's difficult to find that sort of personality when we're exposed to so many different apps.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I also want to kind of comment on what you said about
I see that so much in dating and like the deciphering of text messages and like what does this meme mean? And even beyond dating, it's really curious to think about how there is a baseline of assumption. There's so much assumptions made with online communication, even with like commenting on a post, and even like if we get political, people assuming sleight of hand when there isn't, or you know, some other miscommunication. It's just so ripe for miscommunication.
I think I can't agree with you more.
It's interesting how we can find some common patterns that we've noticed when observing communication. If we zoom in on a specific age group, could you please share what some of the effects online communication has, particularly on youth or adolescents?
I think I'd like to start talking about this with the context of impressionability. So the minds of adolescents and youth are impressionable. You know, one interesting concept analysis study by Nguyen and Zhang stated that young minds, especially the adolescents and young adults, are impressionable. And that's because of three critical attributes that they have. And I think I like to mention it here. The first attribute is the susceptibility to external stimuli. The second one is the inability of reasonable judgment. And the third is changeability to accept or modify attitude or behavior. Now, these attributes make them more vulnerable, more impressionable, and that leaves less room for discernment or sagacity, especially when modern-day digitized world offers limitless choices to them. And if they fail to make productive choices for themselves or evaluate the consequences of those choices, they may end up in situations like cyberbullying, very common, or online harassment, or they may suffer from FOMO, fear of missing out, body image issues. They may get attacked by online predators. And if this is the case, this can severely lead to significant deterioration in their mental health. They may experience sleep disturbances. They may experience sedentary lifestyle, deteriorates, and in some cases, digital addiction. So I think it's important for the youth to understand that the instant gratification, the amusement, and the excitement that digital applications provide can create an illusion where when you engage, you may think it's the reality, but it may not be the reality. It's also important for the youth to understand that there are filters on digital platforms. People tend to show, you know, their best selves. We all do. I mean, yes, we all do. And sometimes because of the factor of anonymity that digital platforms bring in, people can also show their disinhibited selves. News or broadcast messages may be framed or intentional. And we all know that AI algorithms are constantly analyzing us, keeping a track of activities. We may be illusioned to think that we are leading our digital engagements. However, the reality is we are being led and sometimes misled. Hence, it's very important to engage in digital applications with caution.
I especially liked that first point you mentioned about impressionability. Youth are constantly surrounded by people from who they learn and take habits. So, with the fact that children's brains are still developing until they're 26, how does all of the information and people they're surrounded by affect that sort of development?
I think not connected to the reality, and if you are, you know, straying away from what's grounded, what's logical, that can actually influence the development of your personality, the development of your, you know, your ideologies, your worldviews, and sometimes these ideologies, worldviews can be distorted, or they can come from a very skewed perception, and that can lead you to something that can be detrimental for you and for everyone around. So it's very, very important. And I always say a balance is very important here. And when we're talking about this, I don't necessarily mean to imply that digital communications are not helpful. They are indeed helpful. And we are in a world where honestly, we don't have a choice. We can't avoid, you know, our dependency on technology. However, it is also important to have a discretion to mindfully use technology, and where it's possible to communicate, I mean, engage in face-to-face communications, real-life communications. And I think being aware of the potential drawbacks can help you and a balance in both face-to-face communications and digital communication can help you have a balanced perspective and not get driven by the extremes.
I 100% agree and wanted to echo how approaching our relationship with tech with caution and mindfulness is incredibly important. And adding on to that, I wanted to ask if you could discuss any studies or research that you've encountered or conducted yourself that explore the effectiveness of screen-based communication versus in-person communication in contexts such as personal relationships, business settings, or education?
Yeah, sure. I think, as I have mentioned earlier, there is still some debate on the topic as to whether, you know, screen-based communication or face-to-face communication is more effective. There are some researchers who have pointed in-person communication to be more effective, while there are other researchers who have pointed digital communications to be as effective as in-person communications, if not better than in-person communications. I think I'd like to mention one particular study which was published in the Journal of Computers and Human Behavior in the year 2022. This study was especially conducted on 100 participants approximately, and which stated that video conferencing was more effective than face-to-face conferencing or communication, especially while building rapport and trust. There was another interesting study in the similar lines in the year 2021, which was conducted over approximately 200 participants, that found that text-based communication was more effective than face-to-face communication, especially in a situation where you're trying to resolve conflict. I think there's this another interesting study which was conducted on school dropouts, high school dropouts. So so these dropouts were interviewed, but there were two different interviewing processes. One was a digital interview, another one was a face-to-face interview. So the cohort that was interviewed on a digital platform, it was found that they gave more relevant information and insights into the reasons of dropout as compared to the ones who were interviewed face-to-face. So this also implied that digital platforms provide the space to be to bring up difficult and conflicting communications with ease. So I think all these researches support the hypothesis that digital mediums can be a valued tool for communication. Yeah.
Thank you for that insight. It definitely sounds like the effectiveness of each is still being debated. I wanted to circle back to the study on computers and human behavior. What specific elements of virtual conferences contributes to their effectiveness? Is it the accessibility or the ease with which people are able to talk about certain topics?
I think it's both accessibility and the ease with which people can talk about themselves. And I also think it's a lot to do with, a lot of people, they are anxious about presenting themselves to a larger group of people. So although you're aware in a video conferencing that there are larger group of people, however, you're not present there in real time. And that kind of reduces your anxiety. You appear more confident, and if you're presenting, or if you're speaking confidently. And hence, you don't attract the gaze of other people in the group because you're not able to see them. The only person that you're able to see is your own self on the screen. I think that improves your communication, your confidence, and as a result, it draws less criticism, and probably that's a reason why people can build good rapport and trust.
I can definitely relate to that. I have a little presentation anxiety right before going up to speak, and I found that a couple years ago when we were in distance learning, it was a little bit easier to present and talk about the slides. So with all that practice online, when we returned to in-person, it felt a little less stressful than it was before. I think this kind of connects to self-perception and how others perceive the individual. Could you go a little bit more into that kind of perception and the role of screens?
I think when you are perceiving, so basically in the context of virtual communications, the screen limits your distraction, right? But if you're present in an in-person situation where you are talking, you're standing, or you are on a podium and there are people who are looking at you, that increases your distraction. And I think as humans, we do have a general tendency of the mind to personalize things. So even if there's someone in the, let's say in the audience, who just smiles for any personal reason, or maybe two people seem to be distracted and are communicating among themselves, you know, there are chances that you may take it as a way that they're not interested in whatever you're talking, or as a form of, some people may take it as a form of disrespect, or some people may take it as sarcasm that they're being laughed at. So I think let's accept that our mind does have this tendency to personalize things. So the fact that digital platform reduce these distractions, and even if there is a conflicting situation, it's easier to manage the situation or escape the situation or not face the situation than otherwise.
That was a really great answer. Pivoting back to the comparison between in-person and screen communication, are there certain types of conversations or topics that are better suited for each? And if there are, what factors should individuals consider when choosing between these modes of communication?
I think that's a very important question, especially in the present day context. And I think I always say that the intention of a conversation or a communication is that the intended message is received by the receiver in the intended way. So it's important to know when and when not to use digital communication. Digital communications especially are effective when you have already interacted with the receiver, with the person you want to interact with, when you have already met them, you know them. They are also effective. I'm talking about digital communications here. They are also effective in situations where brief and informal updates are needed, where you're planning an event, or you're scheduling and coordinating with larger groups, you're sharing information with larger group, and especially in the work setups where we are remotely collaborating. You know, it's very important for virtual teams or individuals situated and located in different geographic locations to have digital communications, because it enables seamless collaboration. I think just the way we collaborated for this podcast, even being continents and time zones apart. Well, I would certainly state other situations where face-to-face communication is more effective, especially in interpersonal relationships, where emotional or sensitive discussions are very important, especially in personal relationships that require empathy and understanding. Conflict resolution is another situation where face-to-face communications come very useful. In other situations, like where you're negotiating or you're making an important joint decision. And a lot of studies have been also around the fact that at workplace, when you are meeting someone in person, it helps build strong professional connections and rapport. And I think I being a practicing therapist, I believe, especially in one particular situation, that's when I had to break a bad news, a face-to-face interaction helps a lot, because it allows me to immediately support my client and comfort them, because the news is extremely challenging for them. So I think if I had to summarize in a nutshell, I believe that three factors need to be considered before we decide whether it has to be digital communication or in-person communication. I think the first factor is a balanced approach, basically that considers the nature of the conversation. Then the second factor is understanding that what is your desired outcome, what do you want out of this communication. And the third one is the what relationship you shared with the person you're interacting with or communicating with. When you have these three factors in your mind, I think it'll be easier to choose your mode of communication.
Those are great things to consider. And sometimes it may come as a second nature to one person, but might require some more thought from another. Having those considerations listed out was really helpful to following along. I wanted to jump into another topic, and that's the impact of screens on attention, focus, and overall engagement. What would the difference be between how much effort and empathy you put into an interaction? Do you have any strategies to minimize distractions and enhance active participation?
I think parallel use of digital devices during communication, especially when not needed, can significantly impair the quality and overall engagement in the interaction. So many times I've had couples who come to me for marital therapy sessions. They say that they feel dismissed when their partners are engaged in phones while they are trying to make an important conversation. I once had a colleague of mine who complained of how unheard he felt when his manager would serve through his system while he would try to speak to him. I think we all have had that experience where we felt the other person was not engaged with us in a conversation because of their parallel engagement in a device. So I believe these constant notifications, the multitasking that you do, the aspect where your attention gets divided between the conversation and surfing through your digital device, they really impair our active listening skills. As a result, we may become less engaged in the conversation, miss out important cues, and that can potentially weaken our communication and connection that we are trying to form with the other person. I think there are ways of dealing with this, and I think minimizing screen use, especially when you're having important conversations, or creating device free zones or areas or places or rooms where you can have discussions. Setting aside quality time, especially for the ones you care for, so that you can have conversations, communications with them. And nothing can be more flattering than listening skills, mindful listening skills. This can indeed help improve attention, foster meaningful relationships. And if communication at all has to be digital, so let's say you and the person you want to communicate with, you are geographically located at a distance, different time zones, and a digital medium is the only possibility that you have, then I would suggest that choosing a video communication over text or audio communication would be the most ideal choice.
Thank you for the explanation. So for listeners not aware, could you go over what active participation is and any tips for maintaining it during an interaction?
All right. So I think there's a difference between listening and hearing. And when I say that, when you are listening, you understand the intent. When you are listening, you'd expect and allow the space for the other person to complete their sentences. When you are listening, you understand their pauses, their silences, and you empathize. But when you're hearing, probably the next day you forget what was being told to you, or maybe you miss out on important information that was conveyed. So hearing is basically a sensory process. You know, something you hear, some stimuli is coming to your ears and you hear, and that's a sensory process. Listening is a cognitive process where what your sensory processes bring to your ears, you hear something and you process it in your mind. So I think this is the primary difference between listening and hearing. We need to, to be good with our communications, we need to practice active listening, mindful listening, paying attention to all the words that are being told and trying to process them.
I wanted to echo what you said in your response, that when facing a lack of active listening, it might impact your interpersonal relationship with another person. So I wanted to ask if you think that screen-based communication, despite its convenience and accessibility, may lead to feelings of isolation and disconnection?
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's difficult to replace human presence and human touch, no matter how connected one may be virtually. It's a physical presence that eventually leads to satisfied and meaningful interactions, and the lack of which can actually lead to a sense of isolation and sometimes, disconnection from the reality. I have a client, I think I would like to take this example here. So she is basically an Instagram influencer and has nearly 30 million followers. She says, she's still continuing therapy with me, and she says that no amount of likes that she receives on her posts or the interaction that she has, on her IG lives, makes her feel satisfied. And she still feels lonely, and she still craves for that, one genuine human connection that she would like to have in her life. And so I think it's very important, while you cannot avoid digital communications, it's important to have certain things, certain strategies in hand, which can help you better your digital communication. And I think I would like to highlight it here. The first important thing that we need to take care of is choosing quality over quantity, and it's very important to focus, on building deep and meaningful connections with few individuals rather than trying to maintain a large number of superficial online relationships. I think opting for video calls whenever possible and not relying solely on text-based communications is also an important strategy that we can adhere to, especially in terms of digital communications. Being present is also very important. I think we just discussed about active listening. So your active listening during online interactions can make the other person feel that they have your undivided attention, and they feel that they are important to you. It's also important that when you're talking on digital communications, especially if that is what you're relying on, you go to the extent of sharing genuine emotions with honesty and authenticity. This can actually deepen your connections. I think especially when it comes to your family members, your loved ones, engaging in shared activities. So it's like, hey, you tell one of your loved one, what about we watch this movie tonight together? And when you share activities on digital platforms, discuss about them, this builds your, communication. It also gives you a sense of belonging. And I think these days, a lot of applications have these voice notes, the feature for sharing voice messages. I think using voice messages instead of heavily relying on text message is also a good way to add a personal touch to your communications. And I think last but not the least, empathy. Empathy is so, so important, especially in virtual communications. It's good to be a little mindful, cautious when you're using humor, when you're using sarcasm, or you're talking about sensitive topics and which can be misunderstood, especially in a text-based communication. You need to be mindful when you're using emojis or you're using abbreviations for that matter. And if there is any miscommunication, you should take proactive steps to just get in and clarify them. And if you think that your texts are going longer and longer in the process of clarification, it's better to place a call and clarify it. Empathy is also important, and this is actually a rising concern that I observe among people these days, that when you send someone a text and you don't receive replies on time, you tend to personalize it. You think that the person does not want to reply you, or the person is avoiding you. Now, this is where empathy can help you. Empathy can help you understand that maybe it's just not you, it's a other person who may be busy or may be occupied or may have some personal obligations because of which the response is delayed, and it's not necessarily you. So yeah, I think these strategies can help make our digital communications meaningful.
I really appreciate how in-depth that was, and wanted to say that I agree with all of those points that you made. I wanted to ask about that sense of belonging you mentioned earlier. I'm not sure if you're familiar with a lot of social media app features, but what would your thoughts be on voice messages and sending these recordings as your reactions or responses?
I think it's a good way than texting. Your voice messages, a lot of time, you know, when your friends hear your voice notes or messages, they get the intention, they get the your voice, the intonation, the pitch of your voice can also convey them with what intent you you know, you made this remark. So I think it can help you keep misunderstandings, and I think it can also make your friendships good, I believe. So I think, yeah, it's a good practice to use voice messages a little more often as compared to text messages, and it saves your time as well.
It definitely does. My friends and I use it a lot just to check in on each other or send messages that can't be conveyed with the same tone if it's just text. Small features like voice messages really make me appreciate having such accessible and convenient digital platforms. So I want to add onto this topic of youth and communication. What would your advice be to youth who are engaging in digital communication, as well as to the parents who raise them?
I think I'll first begin with the youth. I would like to say that being born in a world of technology can be empowering. However, with great power comes great responsibility. And this time, the responsibility is towards your own self. Make sure there is mindful digital indulgence, and keep a constant surveillance on anything that you do in excess, and strive for balance. I think balance is the key. I repeat, balance is the key. Have a fair balance of outdoor, indoor activities, entertainments. Have a fair balance of meeting friends and interacting with them virtually. And it's also important, I would like to, mention here that investing only in meaningful connections, the connections that make you a better person, the connections that add value to your life. It's also a good idea to, avoid heavy use of applications, especially when you are sad, upset, anxious, or depressed. And in such times, when you're upset and when you're feeling down or low, rely mostly on in-person interactions. Use digital applications to upgrade your life, but definitely not at the cost of your health, mental health, or your well-being. And I think since a lot of listeners would be youth themselves, I would also like to mention about certain warning signs, especially when you can know that your digital indulgence has become a digital addiction, and when you can seek help. Especially when you notice that your digital indulgence is not letting you sleep properly, you're not, your appetite is disturbed, your sleep is disturbed, your social, personal communications are disturbed, you're observing changes in your behavior. You see that the more you indulge in, digital platforms, the more there's a need or craving to indulge. And if you're not indulging, then there are these compulsive thoughts come into your mind, they're distracting you, and unless you indulge, you're not feeling relieved. I think these are the classic signs of digital addiction, and I think if you notice this, it's high time that you do something about it and you reach out for help. It's important to remember here that your future will be the byproduct of the conscious choices you're making today, and it's important that you make sure your choices are aligned with your well-being. And finally, to the parents, I think I would like to say that I know it's not easy and you're trying your best. But remember, trying your best is all that you can do. It's important to understand that the app-based communications or the digital communications can actually offer valuable opportunities for the youth, for the connection, for their learning. However, it's also essential that parents, or also for that matter, educators and caregivers, promote balanced digital use and encourage face-to-face interactions, because this can foster healthy emotional development of the youth. And here, I think modeling is the key. Modeling is basically nothing but doing what you're trying to preach, acting what you're trying to preach. Because the adolescents, as I said, their minds are very impressionable and they mostly learn by observing. So being an example of moderate digital indulgence can be a great way of teaching your children and other who learn from you. And also, if you see someone who's, engaged in, overindulgence, especially on digital platforms, and they're suffering, I think your non-judgmental presence and non-critical support can go a long way in helping them overcome digital addiction. And like all things are good in moderation, I think same goes for digital engagements too. They're good in moderation.
I agree with that last statement. Moderation is a big aspect to consider in digital communication. I want to emphasize the part of your response where you talk about approaching someone who is experiencing symptoms of digital addiction. What is your advice on addressing this issue alongside them with empathy instead of criticism?
I think more than the tips, I'd like to give a real life example here that will help our listeners understand the intention of what we just discussed. I think there was this mother who was very worried about her daughter who was posting inappropriate pictures in the Instagram. And when they approached me for therapy, and when I was having a conversation with the daughter, I got to know that the mother would try to, stop her, prevent her from such engagements by telling her how people would think about her, how her reputation is at stake, and how humiliated she's feeling by such behavior. And I think that is something, is judgmental and it's critical. When we talk about non-judgmental and non-critical stance, then the response to such a situation could ideally be like, look, I'm concerned about your safety. I'm concerned that the posts that you are posting can attack your safety. You're my daughter. I love you very much. And I cannot compromise with anything that makes your presence, other people's presence around you a threat. So when you come from a point of concern, when you come from a point of, worry, and when you show them that your love does not deteriorate, even when you're trying to rectify the behavior, I think that way the intention is ended in the right way. And I often say parents that to follow one mantra, and that is connect before you criticize. It's important to connect with your children before you criticize, because if criticism comes first, even if the wisest of advice that you provide, your children will never listen to it. So it's good to form a connection, a rapport, a trust, so that your children know that what you're saying is for their well-being and not otherwise.
I loved how you phrased it. Connecting before criticizing. It's such an important aspect of communication that is typically glossed over. Starting off conversations with criticism can alter someone else's mindset, especially with how they may start to consider what other people think of them before what they think of themselves, which can impact their safety and well-being. So, reflecting on our conversation, I found so many things incredibly insightful. I wanted to highlight your explanation of active listening and your answer on the warning signs of digital addiction. It's always important to consider both sides of digital media, the positives and the negative aspects, especially during this time when digital activity is imperative to communications and relationships. Do you happen to have any last thoughts or messages you wish to leave off on?
I think I would like to mention to our listeners that, when dealing with a thing where there's no escape, especially the world of technology, we can't escape it. It's always a good idea to, master it rather than letting it master you. So the idea is to let let technology be your slave rather than get enslaved by technology.
All right, so wrapping up, I want to thank you so much for your time and having this conversation with us. I learned so much and appreciate your expertise and thoughts.
Hi, I'm Rashmi, and I'll be leading you through a self-hold practice today. A self-hold practice is a gentle way to reconnect with your body. So let's go ahead and get started by simply noticing your body, just where it is right now. Noticing your seat and your spine and your breath. No need to change it, but if you'd like, maybe taking a deep inhale through the nose, bringing your shoulders up towards your ears, squeezing them in, and exhale, rounding them down your spine. Maybe placing one hand on your belly and one hand on your heart. Connecting with your body. For today's self-hold, we're going to go ahead and place one hand on the base of your head and one hand on your forehead. Gently caressing your head here, feeling the support of your hands. Taking a nice deep inhale here through the nose. Exhaling through the nose. And if you'd like, maybe repeating this affirmation. I am safe and I am contained. I am safe. And I am contained. Feel free to come back to this practice anytime during your day, as often as you would like. Thank you so much for joining me today.